Speaker Paul Erdman died at Northern California Ranch. He was 74 years old. Pulitzer Prize-winning Jim Stamm died yesterday in a car crash in the San Francisco Bay Area. He was 3 years old. You are listening to the Quality News Network.
Attention business owners. Getting new customers is now one click away. Sounds too good to be true, right? Well, you got us. It's actually two clicks away with localyp.com. MyLocalYP.com is more than an online yellow pages. It's an interactive gateway that connects customers with your business, all in just two clicks. Why continue to pay thousands of dollars on an antique advertising medium, especially one that ends up going into the recycling bin? Make the smart upgrade at only a fraction of the cost. Try for yourself, MyLocalYP.com. MyLocalYP.com will put your business in the radar of thousands of potential customers. They'll be able to make reservations online, even print out the map with directions, all in just two clicks. Call 1-800-505-1883 today to find out more about this great new service. The sooner you do, the faster your cash register will start to ring. The number again is 1-800-505-1883. MyLocalYP.com.
The FCC has concluded that it is in the public interest to regulate violence on television, especially during the times when children may be watching, that is between 6 a.m. and 10 p.m. They will recommend that Congress pass legislation to give the government power to regulate violent programming on broadcast and cable television, according to a report in today's Washington Post. Two former Apple executives involved in a stock options backdating scandal were charged today by the Securities and Exchange Commission. One of the employees, the former chief financial officer, has reached a settlement and will pay back around $3.5 million. For the first time ever, Toyota has sold more vehicles around the world than General Motors. The first quarter numbers show the popularity of Toyota's fuel-efficient models. General Motors has held the title as the world's top automaker for 76 years. In March, sales of existing homes in the U.S. fell by 8.4%. That is the largest percentage drop since January of 1989, which marked the start of a strong housing recession. The Conference Board reports its Consumer Confidence Index fell in April as Americans worried about rising gas prices. Light sweet crude is trading at $64.58 a barrel, and near the close of Wall Street today, the Dow was in record territory but is currently up 36 points, NASDAQ up 1, S&P 500 flat. There's more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramoff.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good evening, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. The Attorney General took a grilling this week before the Senate Judiciary Committee, said, "I don't recall more than 70 times," as he claimed to both support the firing of the several U.S. prosecutors and at the same time not really know what happened. Meanwhile, the United States Supreme Court, in its first attack, really, on abortion rights, upheld the so-called partial birth abortion bill, which would ban certain forms of abortion even when a woman would face severe health consequences without them. Meanwhile, the nation is still grieving, of course, for the victims of Virginia Tech and raising tough questions about mental health and gun control. And finally, the Bush administration needs a war czar. Apparently, they don't know what they're doing, and they want to appoint someone to take over and win the war in Iraq. Some have suggested that war czar should be execution manager, given that the czar in Russia may not be someone we want to emulate. These are the issues, and any other issue you want to raise, it's easy to do. The phone number is at the bottom of your screen, 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. To discuss these issues, I invite a regular here on the Inside Scoop, Mike Lane. He's a Republican strategist, the president of Intellifant Strategies. It's his job to give intelligence to the elephants, and Mike, I think they really need you right now.
Mark, it's good to be back. Thank you for having me.
Let's start with Attorney General Gonzalez. Now, they had, of course, I don't recall signs in the audience, and some say it was 70-something, I've heard 80-something, but Attorney General Gonzalez is in a strange position. I mean, first he said he had no involvement in the discussions, and then he says that he supported the decision, and then before the really, I think, very strong comments, not just by Democrats, but by many, many Republicans, basically had to say that he defended the
decision. Well, by one Republican.
No, more than one.
No, there's that...
Specter, Coburn,
Coburn's the key one. Spector hasn't said anything publicly. Spector says his stuff privately.
Did you hear what his questions?
Well,
to,
yes.
They were pretty harsh. It wasn't just Spector and Coburn.
And Spector,
Lindsey Graham had some very sharp things to say.
But Lindsey Graham is overall supportive of the Attorney General.
He didn't sound overall, like it to me. Lindsey Graham asked the question, and I watched a lot of these hearings. He said, given that the Attorney Generals that you fired, the U.S. Attorneys that you fired, you said were not the right people for the right time, how would that standard apply to you? Mr. Attorney General.
Right.
That's not a friendly comment. I would argue that only one person on that whole committee was friendly to him, and that was Orrin Hatch. Every other Republican seemed, even Brownback, very conservative Republican from Kansas, seemed stunned when Attorney General Gonzalez couldn't give the reasons why he fired several of the prosecutors.
Well, the Attorney General should have been a little brighter and practiced it and said, well, I fired them because I didn't like the color of their eyes, which is a perfectly legitimate excuse to fire a United States attorney. What he's done is got himself into political hot water through his own political ineptitude. This all started off, Mark, as allegations that there was something unethical going on, that these people were fired for nefarious political reasons, that there was really something we needed to dig into to get to the bottom of the scandal. And as it turns out, after the hearings of a bunch of people, there's really no scandal going on other than the fact that you've got someone who isn't very good at politics and somebody who is fairly awful at defending himself in front of a Senate hearing up there embarrassing himself with, inept answer after inept answer as to what he's done. There used to be a time when if you were damaging the president, you took the hint and you jumped off the ship and you got out of there. Mr. Gonzalez is apparently not bright enough to figure that out. The president wants him to stay, as evidenced by his continued support for him. I think, actually, from a political standpoint, this is likely to go away. The Democrats have scored as many points as they possibly can. There's no ethical things to keep looking for because they dug. Leahy and Schumer were up there hammering away and came up with absolutely nothing in terms of the ethics things. And the president has said, I don't care how inept the guy is, he's my friend, he's staying. It's going to go away.
You've got to be kidding.
I'm telling you, it's going to go away.
If there's one thing that was very clear to me from that hearing, is that Attorney General Gonzalez either is lying through his teeth, which is possible, or has no idea what's going on, or more likely, both. He has no idea what's going on and is lying through his teeth. His loyal deputy, Kyle Sampson, the one that did not plead the Fifth Amendment, which would be Kyle Sampson's deputy, Monica Gooding, who apparently has something that's so severe to hide that she fears criminal prosecution because of it. That's pretty severe. But Kyle Sampson, her boss, said, we're going to reward the loyal Bushies. Then Attorney General Gonzalez says, we would never fire anyone for political reason. As you know, a president can fire someone for no reason.
Because he doesn't like the color of their eyes.
Well,
that's fine.
Every president from Ford, Carter, Reagan, Bush, Clinton, and then Bush fired all the prior prosecutors and started with a new slate. That's what they all do at the beginning of their term. What is unprecedented is firing these selective eight prosecutors in the middle who were very, very highly regarded prosecutors. Now, Kyle Sampson made it clear that it was done for political reasons. Attorney General Gonzalez, his boss, says it was not done for political reasons, but when asked why it was done, he said, I have no idea.
Right.
So now you think it's going to go away when basically Attorney General Gonzalez tells his subordinates, shh, you go fire them, you do all the bad stuff, and me, I'll be like the guy in Casablanca just to be shocked that gambling is going on here.
Look, The Democrats and even a couple of Republicans, Tom Coburn, senator from Oklahoma, among them.
Coburn told him to resign.
And yes, he did.
And Spector all but told him to resign.
Spector did not tell him to resign.
He said, I'm going to tell the president privately, but you should know that I don't think he's helping the president any.
Spector wrote a private letter to the president advising him
to fire Attorney General Gonzalez.
Well, we don't know. We didn't read it.
It's been leaked.
You can read between the lines.
Right.
Spector doesn't think that the Attorney General
Lindsey
is doing
Graham
a good
was
job.
Harsh. Even Kyle had some...
Harsh is not the standard, though, Mark. The standard is, does the president support him or not? That's the standard for a cabinet officer
Should
remaining in office.
Should the president support him, Mike?
I, you know,
Would you advise Attorney General Gonzalez to resign?
You know what? I would have advised the Attorney General to jump off the ship 4 or 6 weeks ago.
Me too.
That was when the Attorney General was able to get out without doing all the damage of the last 4 or 6 weeks,
exposing himself to the fire.
He's made it worse. But it can't get any worse than this.
I'll tell you how it gets worse.
It doesn't get worse.
There are 5 million emails missing. And Karl Rove was under a legal...
Didn't write all 5 million of them.
No, he didn't.
I told you, he didn't write all 5 million.
No, he only wrote a small portion of them.
Right.
But he was under a legal obligation due to the whole Tradergate affair
to
save those emails that are suddenly missing. That, my friend, is obstruction of justice and could lay new charges out for Karl Rove. If he doesn't find those emails, he's in a heck of criminal trouble, isn't
Mark,
he?
Mark, as you know, email is forever. There's no such thing as erasing email. It exists someplace.
I agree.
It will be recovered.
It will, because
your party says
it can't be recovered.
No,
your party, Republican National Committee, says we have no idea where this is.
It will be recovered. There's no such thing. I don't know. They're bringing in right now for computer forensic experts to comb through the system and figure out how to find it. But email is forever. We'll find out.
Right.
We'll find out.
And what I think you'll find is the reason it was deleted is there's some pretty serious stuff in there.
I doubt it, because you don't want to hide something for 3 months while you have a forensic expert looking for it and only then have it come out after it's a story that it's been deleted. If there's something bad in there, you want to give it away like, okay, ho-hum, here it is. I don't know what you're looking for.
Yes, that is the strategist's position.
To delete it and hide for 3 months and then suddenly discover it when everybody's sitting there holding their breath makes absolutely no sense.
Makes no political sense.
I can't believe they're that dumb.
Well, I think they are. I remember a certain 18-and-a-half-minute gap in the last record of a recent president a few years ago.
7 lives of technology ago. That was a whole different
idea. Destroy the evidence and hope to get away with it. I think that's exactly what they did here. And if forensic experts, I thought they didn't think this would become. See, they're so used to having Republicans in control, where they say, break the law, torture people, violate the Bill of Rights, throw people in jail without an attorney, and we're not going to check into it, whatever you say.
I'm telling you, the White House counsel, a guy named Fred Fielding, who's been there before, he's a pro, he's an expert, he's been around the track, he's admired by both Republicans and Democrats. He did work in the counsel's office in the Nixon White House. He has all kinds of experience dealing with the Congress on these kinds of things. He would not allow anybody to delete anything that was going to be, you know, subject to a subpoena from Congress,
but
which
you know
it ultimately
who would?
Was.
You know who would? Harriet Myers.
Harriet Myers hasn't been there for over a year. Harriet Myers left
this
year ago.
This happened. A lot of this happened under her tutelage.
But when did it become subject to a congressional inquiry? When did Henry Waxman send the letter saying, not only do I want the official White House emails, but I want the RNC emails away as well? It was only about 2 or 3 weeks ago that Waxman sent that letter warning them that he wanted it.
A few months ago. When they were first
so anything that might have been deleted a year ago is not subject
to... You
know.
You're right about the Attorney General firings, but you're wrong about Karl Rove, at least, because he, since 2005, has been ordered to save everything, and he hasn't. And we all know this is the political man in the White House. This is the guy who gives the orders. This is the guy who decides who becomes Supreme Court Justice, which U.S. prosecutor. I mean, except with the exception of foreign policy, which is run by Dick Cheney, Karl Rove is effectively the President of the United States. And if he leaves office, what will Georgie Bush do?
Well, it comes as a surprise to everybody in the White House that Karl Rove is running things. I think you'll find
I don't think it comes as a surprise to anyone. In fact, that's why we tell you on the Inside Scoop exactly what's going on.
You know, Mark, I know you guys are desperate to get Carl under oath and on TV for a fishing expedition.
We don't need a fishing expedition. I can
guarantee you it ain't going to happen.
We want him under oath.
And there's nothing there anyway.
Will he disobey a subpoena?
He's not.
Because I think Henry Waxman has one, and it's got his name on it.
It's not up to him. It's not up to Rove to accept or reject the subpoena. It's up to the president to allow him to testify, and the president's not going to allow him to testify.
Okay, so what if he gets declared in contempt of Congress? Then we get the sergeant-at-arms to wrap him up and throw him in jail.
You know what? If you can get the sergeant-at-arms to walk into the White House and pick him up...
Is he going to hide in the White House?
That would be quite a scoop, because...
We just wait till he comes out.
It's my understanding that the Congress screamed and yelled when the FBI went into the Congress to look for William Jefferson's records.
You're not going to the White House.
You're not going to...
very interesting to see if he barricades himself in, much like the Secretary of State under Andrew Johnson did, actually hid in his office, arguing that they couldn't come in because the Congress was out to get rid of him. It would be a very interesting historical precedent if Karl Rove isn't, in fact, imprisoned in the White House.
He won't be. Listen, it's a fun debate, but it's not going to happen that way. You know
questions.
That.
And if he doesn't,
he will answer
they
the
have
questions.
That ultimate authority.
He will answer the questions.
Will he do it under oath in public?
I don't believe the President's going to allow him to do that. It's
if
not his decision. It's the administration's. There has been a consistent 200-year precedent of the administration refusing to let a congressional aide go up there and testify under oath in public on these kinds of things because they need to have the ability to have candid, honest advice from the staff.
Even Gerald Ford.
And to have them do that.
At one point testified before the Congress.
Yes, he did.
It can be done. And I have to tell you, I think if Karl Rove continues to play hardball, and say, I don't know what happened here, and I don't know where the emails are, even though I was ordered by a court to save them all, I wouldn't be surprised if a few subpoenas
Again,
get issued.
It's not Karl Rove, it's the White House.
We'll be right back, 888-488-MARK, right after this.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. If you want to call in, ask a question, have your voice heard, it's easy to do. Just pick up the phone and dial 888-488-MARK. We'd like to hear from you. I'm still not done with Attorney General Gonzalez, Mike. It seems to me that this...
Apparently the rest of the Democrats aren't done with him either. But
no,
I'm telling you, he's going to survive.
I don't think we'll be done until he resigns.
All right.
To me, Attorney General Gonzalez is the classic example of exactly what Kyle Sampson wanted as a U.S. attorney. He is a loyal Bushy, quote unquote. What is a loyal Bushy? In my view, it's someone who is loyal to his president and his country be damned. This is the guy, after all, who when Bush wanted to sign orders torturing people, fine. Ignore the Geneva Conventions, fine. Hide prisoners from the Red Cross, fine. Hey, throw Americans in jail without trial forever, fine. Hey, let's execute a bunch of people in Texas that have never had lawyers or are mentally incompetent, fine. This is Mr. Rubber Stamp. I think there's a reason why George Bush calls him Fredo. To me, it's kind of like a loyal dog. There by your side. Yes, sir, Mr. President, I'll do whatever you want. My question for you is, first, I guess, if you agree with my characterization, but number two, isn't what they were trying to do is, in essence, recreate all the U.S. prosecutors and make them the same kind of loyal Bushy that Gonzalez is?
Well, no, I don't agree with your characterization. I think you're being a bit harsh on the Attorney General. I've already stipulated to the fact that he's probably as politically inept as any cabinet officer ever gets, with the possible exception of Jim Watt back in the 70s, who dumped the Beach Boys as family entertainment on the mall in favor of Wayne Newton. Now, that was about as politically inept as you get, too. Alberto Gonzalez is not.
Would he ever tell the president no? Let's start with loyal. Let's loyalty. I mean, to me, yes, you should be loyal to the person who hires you. But at the same time, you've got to recognize it as a constitution and a country that you are more loyal to first. Would Alberto Gonzalez ever tell the president no? Because I don't think he's capable of it.
You know, there's a lot of friendship between the two of them. They go back forever. Their careers have been mutually intermingled. There's a lot of loyalty about that. And loyalty is not a bad thing, despite what...
It is when it's about country and constitution.
Despite what Chuck Schumer is trying to say, loyalty is not a bad thing. Now,
would he ever tell the president no?
Well,
I mean, let's talk about it.
But it's not a...
He never would he?
Well, who knows what kind of conversations they have in private. But when the president says he wants to do something, and the attorney general says, well, you can, you know, do it this way on one hand, or if you do it on this way, and the president says, well, is there any way that will work? And the attorney general says, well, let me research that and see if I can find any precedent or anything, you know, any authority in the Constitution or any authority in law and stuff like that. Comes back and says, Mr. President, I have good news. I did find this law that says blah, 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 blah. This is the way these things go.
That's not Alberto Gonzalez.
You know, this is the way they go.
I understand the attorney general of the United States is the top law enforcement officer of the United States. What that means is that sometimes their loyalty has to be to their country first. I don't think Attorney General Gonzalez ever once told President, you can't torture people. It's against the law. You can't hide people from the
sure
Red
Cross.
Well,
I'm sure he did.
It's against the law.
I'm sure he did. And
this is the guy who offered these secret executive orders allowing the president around.
We're getting back to whether or not waterboarding was torture or was not torture. And we've had this discussion before. I can sit here and re-debate that and tell you that it's not torture.
Point,
other people would tell you it was.
My point is that Gonzalez is not an independent mind of any sense. He is a man who is just following orders.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the kind of guy he is. And it seems to me that the kind of prosecutors they want is someone who will just follow orders, someone who wouldn't prosecute Duke Cunningham for taking bribes, Republican congressman from San Diego, someone who would go out and challenge the governor of Washington in a close vote, someone who would make sure that in Arizona they don't go after Rick Renzi. I mean, every one of these prosecutors, with the exception of one, is there any coincidence that every one of them was going out either after Republican corruption or was not going after Democrats fast enough in the case of Iglesias?
Is that
a coincidence?
I can tell you that every Republican in the country is happy that crook from California... The crook from California... Well, the other stuff doesn't alliterate as well, so let me finish this. The crook from California is in jail and he's serving his term.
Without his diamond-studded toilet seat.
The neophyte from Ohio, Mr. Ney, is in jail and is going to
and
stay
Rick
there.
And Rick Renzi and John Doolittle will join them shortly.
You know what? If Doolittle is found guilty of something, then he will go to jail.
Okay.
Right now, there's not a lot of smoke around Doolittle. It surrounds maybe it's his wife. Maybe there is something.
We'll see.
We don't know what's going on. But you know what I really like? I like the fact that while Congressman Jefferson, William Jefferson, the Democrat who got caught with 90 grand of cold cash,
prosecute him,
is still in his seat in Congress, and they were trying to put him on better committees, John Boehner, the Republican leader in the House, called Doolittle in and said, "You will resign your committee assignment, and I will have that letter in a half an hour." And
you know what?
He got the letter of resignation, and Doolittle's running around without a committee assignment now. That's the way Republicans take care of their scandals.
Republicans take care of their scandals.
That's the way
they
do it.
By voting to change the rules so that when DeLay gets indicted, he can still run Congress.
Why hasn't Nancy Pelosi told Jefferson to get off every committee?
She did. And what happened?
He's still sitting there
on a committee. She did when it looked like he was going to be indicted. All right? Then he was reelected by his constituents, which I certainly argued several times they should elect someone else in the primary. They reelected him, and he hasn't been indicted yet. Now, I think he should be indicted. Now, I don't know why he hasn't. I don't know all the evidence. Frankly, I'm surprised he hasn't been, and I think he should be.
We'll find out.
But
should he be sitting on a committee while he's under a cloud, the way Doolittle was forced to resign his committee assignment?
I don't
because
think so, and that's why she fired him last year.
So John Boehner went too far?
But the thing is that the cloud has been going on now for 2 years, 3 years. I don't know why it's taken so long for them to indict him. I think if they had a case, they would have indicted him already. So I don't understand why it's taken so long. But my question has to do with the question of the system of justice overall. Prosecutors throughout this country, U.S. attorneys, have to make hard decisions on who to prosecute and who not to prosecute. And part of my concern is that they will prosecute people who shouldn't be prosecuted to become a loyal Bushie. Classic case, Wisconsin. I assume you know the case of the woman in Wisconsin. She was on a panel of seven to decide which travel agents to use. She used the travel agents that gave the lowest bid, and they put her in jail for that, called it Democratic corruption, brought up right before the election of Wisconsin. The Seventh Circuit actually has just now done an astounding thing. They not only overturned the conviction, but they said, free her now. They didn't even return it to the lower court and said, you didn't have a scintilla of evidence. Now, this is a loyal, Bushie prosecutor. It seems to me that when all the people prosecuting Republicans get fired by Attorney General Gonzalez, and all the people that aren't prosecuting Democrats fast enough get fired by Attorney General Gonzalez, and someone who puts an innocent woman in jail just for political reasons, that's a loyal Bushie. He stays. You have to wonder if there's something political going on.
Mark, the problem with your theory is that if you're going to get rid of somebody for political reasons, you do it before they prosecute and get the conviction. You don't do it afterwards. So when you've got when you've got people like Bob Ney and the crook from California and the rest of those
Cunningham,
guys,
Doolittle.
If you want to get rid of them, or if you want to get rid of the prosecutors, you cut them out before they bring the charges. That's when you cut off the investigation. You don't wait until they get the conviction and say, oh, you did a bad thing, now you're gone.
Sure you do, because you're sending a signal to prosecutors across the country. You better watch.
No, you send a signal. Send a signal before they nail your guy.
Look, Attorney General,
you know what? Duke Cunningham was not our guy. Duke Cunningham is in jail where he belongs. He's not our guy.
He was your guy. He and Jack Abramoff, all of them were your guys.
Not our guy.
Look, you can disown him now. But the point is
I disowned him a long time ago.
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
When I saw the menu, Monica's okay.
Why is she pleading the fifth? What's she hiding?
Why should she go up there for a witch hunt and have the
Did
Senate?
She commit a crime or not?
We have no
idea. We don't know. And
right.
what did she say? She said, if you make me testify, then I will say things that may incriminate myself.
No, she said.
Now, either she's lying.
She
she's pleading the fifth.
No.
That's what pleading the fifth means.
What she said was that I'm not as smart as you are at this game, and I know you're going to try and trip me up and track me and get me to say contradictory things, and I'm not going to fall for your game, so I'm going to take the fifth so that you don't force me into a situation where I accidentally commit perjury.
If that's true...
Then she has
no right to take the fifth, and she needs to be in jail. Because the only reason you have to take the fifth is to prevent you from saying something that will incriminate yourself. What she's saying is that if you put me under oath, I will be forced to either lie to protect my president and my attorney general who are doing something nefarious, or I'll get caught with perjury, and I don't want to tell the truth because the president will get in trouble, and I don't want to lie because you're going to catch me with perjury. If she weren't afraid of criminal prosecution, she has no right to plead the fifth.
Well, she does have the right to plead the fifth because she fears that a political witch hunt at which she is not experienced about being defendant...
How about just telling the truth?
...will trip her and trap her into saying contradictory, and then that contradictory thing will be used to prosecute her and put her in jail for perjury.
Easy answer.
She shouldn't have to submit herself to a political witch hunt like that.
Here's an easy answer.
All right.
Raise your hand and tell the truth.
This isn't
a question of who she slept with. This isn't private stuff. This isn't an affair. This isn't stuff she should be embarrassed about. If she did nothing wrong, she should not mind raising her right hand and telling the truth under oath. Karl Rove should do the same thing.
If Senators Leahy and Schumer were satisfied with the truth, then that would be an easy thing. But they're not satisfied with the truth. They're looking for a scalp. It's a political witch hunt.
Who's going to prosecute her? The same U.S. prosecutors that have to be loyal Bushies under Attorney General Gonzalez. If she hasn't broken the law, she has nothing to fear. She knows
that's not true.
She has broken the
that's
law.
That's not true.
That's why she's putting
that's not
face.
True. They will trick her and they will trap her and they will find a way to get her to contradict herself under oath, and then they'll refer that as perjury charges to the Justice Department.
Really?
That's what a political witch hunt is.
I guess
that's what Schumer and Leahy
you know
want
what?
To happen.
By your logic, Mike, no one should ever testify under oath. If you're called to the stand, you should always plead the fifth because prosecutors will try to trap you and trick you and convince you to commit perjury. I thought
it's a shame
you would take the high road
and
say, tell the truth under oath. I mean, after all, the Republicans who want to impeach Bill Clinton for lying about a sex act seem to say, oh, no, she can plead the fifth as much as she wants because she's a good person. Look, if she hasn't committed a crime...
She hasn't.
If she hasn't...
We don't think so.
We don't know because she doesn't want to incriminate herself. And look, she has that right of the Constitution. I respect that right, but I will not speak well of her for using that right to protect herself and to protect the lies of this administration. Folks, if you want to join in this discussion, you're welcome to do so. The toll-free number is 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. You can tell me I'm wrong. You can tell Mike he's wrong. You can tell us we're both wrong. We want to hear from you right after this.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. In other news, of course, everyone is still reeling after the Virginia Tech massacre. The horror there, and we devoted an entire show to this yesterday, so I won't spend too much time on it, but I do want to encourage people to take a look at that on RadioInsideScoop.com. We had someone from Gun Rights Lobby and someone from Gun Control Advocates, and really, I think, talk very seriously about the problems and how to prevent such a thing from happening again. And to some extent, it's going to be hard, because you're always going to have crazy people, and you're always going to have homicidal people. To me, Mike, it raises questions of mental health and how we treat that in our society, and, of course, questions of guns. Let me start with mental health. Do you think the authorities, in hindsight, it's easy to say, but do you think the authorities should have caught him, should have been able to involuntarily hospitalize someone like Cho?
Well, they could have, if the judge decided to.
Well, the judge order him checked out for a day.
Right.
And then the people at the hospital said, at least in December 05, he wasn't imminent danger to himself or others.
Right.
Now, I remember a time, I think it was Ronald Reagan, where there used to be a lot more people incarcerated, is the wrong word, hospitalized.
Involuntarily committed.
Right.
Involuntarily committed.
With mental health problems.
Mm-hmm.
And he basically cut funding for all that, and so we have a lot of homeless people, frankly, who are mentally ill. I'm concerned that we had two poetry teachers, a creative writing teacher and a poetry teacher, who saw his writings. They were very disturbing. They were extremely violent. Two women that he stalked. He was on some kind of prescription medication. We don't know yet. There was this judge's order. And it seems to me everyone just sort of passed the buck. The university said, that's in the hands of the hospital. The hospital said, nope, he's free. He's in your hands. Shouldn't we do a better job as a society to take care of our mentally ill and to prevent something like this from happening?
I think we should, and we're looking for the proper balance, and I don't think we found where that proper balance is yet. Let me correct one thing, or offer a differing viewpoint. You're right. Back in the 70s, 80s, we had a higher percentage or higher number of people who were involuntarily committed. But it wasn't Ronald Reagan whose budget cuts released them all out to the street. It was the mental health community themselves, the mental health advocates, who said this is a violation of their rights. They should not be involuntarily committed. You know, they need to have the opportunity to be out there and be mainstreamed into society and to succeed and to survive and things like that.
It appears that's okay with me if they're not a danger to themselves or others.
It appears we may have gone too far. Now, what we know in hindsight now is that, as many scholars have read Virginia law, it was complied with, and there's no reason why this guy should not have been out and doing things. But there's a federal provision that the state judge was not aware of that would have triggered his inability to purchase a gun.
Exactly, and I was just going to get to that.
And you know, how do you get a state system to be 100% aware of all federal laws so that they can do it?
I'll tell you how you get to do
please.
It.
Please.
Carolyn McCarthy, Congresswoman of New York,
right.
Long Island, has had a bill.
My home district where I grew up,
there
by
you
the
go.
Way.
I'm sure you know her story. This was a woman whose husband and son were shot by another crazy homicidal mass
killer. The Long Island Railroad shooter.
And she was living a fairly ordinary life until then. That obviously was a profound moment in her life, and she ran for Congress, largely on the issues of gun control. She's had a bill that's passed the House twice now, been filibustered in the Senate twice now, and all it would do is to require states to turn over all their mental health records, any record of crime, anything that would prevent you from buying a gun, to the federal authorities, and to give them enough money to do it, and also to punish them if they don't do it. And it seems to me this is a very good bill. You even have John Dingell, who's a pro-gun Democrat, working on it. And at least according to the Washington Post, the NRA,
right.
lo and behold, is considering it.
Right.
Can you join with me in saying that this, of all gun control measures, needs to be passed? It needs to be passed right away.
Yeah, I think this is a reasonable approach. This is not something that is infringing on the constitutional right of Americans who should have the ability to own and carry a weapon. This is something that is designed, and I think very effectively designed, to keep guns out of the hands of people who shouldn't have them. As soon as Chairman Dingell finishes negotiating the final language with the NRA, and you're right, by all reports, the NRA is on board on this.
Although there are some right-wing gun owners of America,
GOA would be against this, and civil defense leagues and things like that would be against it. But the NRA is a fairly mainstream organization.
I'm not going to be with you on that, but I'm glad they're on board with this bill, and I'm glad you're on board with this bill.
I think
we can both endorse it, and I want... Folks, if you've heard about this bill, I want you to encourage your local member of Congress to come on board. Really, even if you love your guns, this is a very modest bill to say that if you have mental health problems or a violent criminal record, the state is required to report that to the federal authorities. Frankly, I think if they had, maybe, Cho would have had a lot more difficulty in buying the gun that killed so many innocent people. So I'm really glad to hear your support on that.
Yeah, that's
one other thing that I would support, and that's backing off some of the what maybe mental health people supported before, is I'm really concerned to the extent that privacy laws are being used in a way that are dangerous to our society. I'm all for privacy. I'm a big supporter of privacy. But when it comes to mental health problems, that could affect people's lives. I mean, to me, you have a right to keep your own stuff private. But if you are going to harm somebody else, we have a right to know. And they've done that with child molesters. They need to do that with mental health. And I'll just give you a classic example, and that's of Michael Kennedy. In Fairfax County, you may remember him. I think he was 17. Mm-hmm. He's now 18.
Right.
The boy was absolutely crazy. He is absolutely crazy. His parents had guns all over the house. In fact, mm-hmm. his father was just convicted for it, and he shot two police officers. Now, he voluntarily committed himself mm-hmm. to a mental institution for some time.
And then walked out.
My understanding is the current basis of the law is if you voluntarily commit yourself, that is not submitted to the authorities. Let me suggest that if you feel you need to be voluntarily committed, that's good. I'm glad. You need your help. You probably shouldn't be owning a gun. And that I think that this kind of information should be passed on to parents, to schools, to the police. People need to have these records. You agree?
You know, Mark, it is such a difficult area, and I don't agree completely with what you've just said. There are clearly some times when someone who has been subject to therapy should not own a gun again, if they're a danger. But there are times. Let's take a young woman who got married young. She had maybe two or three or four kids. She's still in her 20s. Perhaps her husband was abusive. He decided to leave her. She's destitute. She's having trouble putting food on the table for her children. And she's really having trouble coping with the world. Can't do anything. And she's on the verge of a breakdown and voluntarily commits herself and goes, I can't deal with this. I need help, please. If she goes through that, why would you take someone like that and tell her that she's not allowed to...
Because if she could snap and kill a bunch of people, but give her mace.
But she wasn't going to snap.
She was having trouble coping. Look, it's hard to
know. It's an inexact science.
It's hard to know. And I would err on the side of saying, no mental problems if you want to own a gun. None. You know, if you have mental... I know you may disagree with me. Gun ownership is a privilege, not a right. And
Do I disagree, but the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals disagrees with you, too.
No, but the 1939 Supreme Court case of Miller agrees with me that unless you're in a militia... Look, it seems to me that if you're mentally ill or on the verge of a breakdown, look, there's just the case of the woman who killed her husband, a pastor, who may well have abused her in Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, I don't know that I want that woman to have a gun. I mean, people, that doesn't mean
she's a convicted felon now.
She is.
She's,
but my point is that even if people have justified gripes, which they do,
mm-hmm.
then it seems to me that if they're on the verge of a mental breakdown, I don't know that I want them to have a gun.
Well, clearly you don't want them to have a gun if they're on the verge of a mental breakdown, but if somebody voluntarily commits themselves and doesn't really know what mental health state they're in themselves, they go in and they're examined and they're told, you're fine,
treat
you just
them,
need a little
take
thing.
Take care of them, but don't let them have a gun.
I don't know that you can take away somebody's constitutional rights for the sole purpose of accommodating someone who may have voluntarily, unnecessarily committed themselves for some mental health reasons.
Let's go to the phone lines. Mike from Centerville, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Thank you for having me on. Same question I called in about 2-3 months ago. The second amendment of the Constitution says a well-regulated militia. I don't think Mr. Cho was part of any well-regulated militia.
Well, thank you, Mike. I agree, obviously. I think that the Second Amendment only protects people in the National Guard or other well-regulated militias.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they have a constitutional right to own a gun. Do you disagree?
Well, it's not a matter. I'm not a constitutional
lawyer. We're arguing about policy.
You are a constitutional lawyer, Mark.
Right.
I'm not. So, you know, I'm not going to win an argument with you on constitutional law. However, I will say that the most recent decision we have out of the D.C. Court of Appeals disagreed with Mike from Centerville and disagrees with you.
Yes.
A very learned panel of judges said that, you know, no. It is constitutionally embedded that individuals have the right to bear arms.
And I disagree with that decision.
Now, right.
Another decision that came out of United States Supreme Court would have been a huge news item, I think, if it weren't for Attorney General Gonzalez and the massacre at Virginia mm-hmm. Tech. And that, of course, is a Supreme Court ruling that upheld, for the first time, I believe, since Roe v. Wade, an abortion restriction that would say, in effect, a woman may have to suffer severe adverse health consequences in order to be forced to have a baby. I mean, in the case of the partial birth abortion bill, so-called, Congress had a law very similar to the case of Stemmerich v. Carhart, which was a Nebraska law, mm-hmm. which said that you can't use this particular abortion procedure except for the life of the mother. Now, back in the Nebraska case, they said life or health of the mother. And I know that we worked on this bill in Congress, mm-hmm. I'll have you know, and the Democrats, including such liberals as Barney Frank and many abortion rights advocates, not all of them, because some didn't want to go this far, but said, we're willing to support this bill as long as you have an exception for the severe adverse health consequences for the mother. Barbara Boxer was ready to support that bill. In other words, saying that you can only use this procedure if by avoiding this procedure, the woman suffers severe adverse health consequences. So to me, it's a very fascinating thing that the court is saying that a citizen of the United States, a woman, must suffer severe adverse health consequences in order to give birth to a baby that she doesn't want. And I find it quite surprising.
Well, I don't think that's exactly what the court said. And my understanding...
So the bill said, and they upheld the bill.
My understanding of it is, look, when does a partial birth abortion take place?
Very rarely.
Right. But it takes place in the very latter stages of pregnancy because the normal method of abortion doesn't work.
That's right. It's a very rare process and generally used for health reasons.
Right. It's, well, actually not generally used. The testimony in front of the committee was that there really was not anyone who could put their finger on a specific medical situation
and some doctors said it was absolutely necessary.
Right, but the doctors said it was necessary with the ones who performed this kind of abortion.
Right.
So, they have a vested financial interest.
They weren't the only ones who said that. There were doctors all over the map. But when you have Congress outlawing a specific medical procedure for political reasons, shouldn't we be worried?
Well, I don't know if it's for political reasons as much as it is for protection of the infant. You know, when you've got a fetus that has gone eight and three quarters months and is within, you know, 7-3-1 day of delivery, and then for some reason, and I won't even speculate what that reason is, but within 1 day to 1 week of delivery, the mother decides, you know, I really don't want this baby, and then they perform this medical procedure that is so gruesome and barbaric.
Mike,
I
will agree with you that even Roe v. Wade would prohibit an abortion a week before birth, except in extremely serious cases where the woman's health is in severe danger. I myself am not happy, and I'd be happy to prohibit an abortion in the 8th month unless the woman faces serious adverse health consequences, the kind that, for me, should have been in that bill. We're going to take another break. We'll come back to you if you want to call in. 888-488-MARK. Back after this.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. You're welcome to call in. The toll-free number is 888-488-MARK. Martha from Annandale, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Welcome. Thank you for having me on the air. I just wanted to comment because I had overheard the talker talk about, I'd overheard the speaker talk about the gun lobbying stuff. I just wanted to comment that I'm pro-life and I'm also... anti-gun. And a lot of people who are pro-life have a hard time switching over. They see that they're two different issues. And to me, to be pro-life is to be pro-life on both sides of the spectrum. It's unfortunate that one issue is Republican and the other side is Democrat, because to me, it's one and the same thing.
I appreciate that, Martha. I don't see any inconsistency at all between being opposed to abortion and also to being for gun control. And I think Martha raised a very good point.
Yeah, I don't see them as being inconsistent with each other. You know, they're unrelated, disconnected issues, Martha. And it so happens that one party tends to be on the same side of both issues, not universally. The other party tends to be on the other side, but not universally.
But there are pro-gun Democrats, there are pro-life Democrats.
And there are
gun control Republicans,
there
and there are pro-choice Republicans. So, Martha, while I think you're right for the majority, I think there are many people who share your view.
I just feel that a lot of people get hung up on fear factors, and each side of the campaign has fear factors, like on the pro-choice side, there's things about the hangers, and then the other side is like, I'm not going to give up my gun. And I think, you know, there's a peaceful situation on both sides. And to be pro-life is to be pro-life, to give up your, it means giving up some rights to having your guns kill people just as much.
Well, Martha, if I may, it's not my view that the purpose of having a gun is to kill someone. The purpose of having a gun would normally be to protect yourself from being assaulted or being killed, or to have it for sports reasons, or competition reasons, or something like that. But anybody who owns a gun for the purpose of killing someone is exactly the kind of person that Mark and I would agree ought not to have a gun in the first place.
Okay, but Mike, I mean, you look at someone like Joe. He had hollow point bullets. Now, anyone will tell you hollow point bullets are designed to kill people. They're
right.
Not designed to kill animals. They sort of explode inside the body. You don't want deer meat all over the place. They are designed to kill people, which means I have no problem with a military having them or a police officer having them. But it seems to me those kind of bullets shouldn't be sold to the general public.
I would agree with you there. I don't see a need for hollow points to be generally available to the public.
Good. I'm glad to hear that you agree with me on that.
There's not an argument that could be made that it infringes on anybody's constitutional rights.
Martha, on the other issue, on the abortion issue, let me tell you why I am against the so-called partial birth abortion bill. I will agree that in most cases, first of all, this procedure is very, very rare. It's used extremely rarely. And I would agree with you and with Mike that it shouldn't be used on a whim. This isn't a procedure that if you want an abortion, do it early on. Don't do it in the last few weeks. But in some very rare cases, a woman could face serious adverse health consequences, like not being able to have a child again, or to be perhaps even in life danger. And in those rare cases, I would like to see this procedure be an option for a woman and her doctor. Do you disagree?
I understand and I agree with that, but unfortunately most women don't use it for that reason. And it's horrible to think that a child that at 6 months, I mean before the child has even reaches the 9-month period of birth, that a child that is born like way before that can live outside
right.
of the uterus.
Well, that's why I want to distinguish between Martha. You're right that most abortions in the first trimester, first 3 months, are not done for health reasons. They're done because the woman doesn't want to carry the baby to term. But I think you'll find that most late-term abortions are done for health reasons, and I have no problem restricting them for health reasons. I'm wondering if that could be a compromise between pro-choice and pro-life positions, to say that you can only have late-term abortions for health reasons, but you can't have them just because you don't want to carry the fetus to term.
I agree with that, yeah.
Well, the difficulty there is that who makes the decision as to what's the health reason, and it's typically the doctor who's performing the procedure. And there is some evidence that the doctors who are doing this will sign anything in order to perform the procedure. I don't know how we get around that. Someone help me with this.
I don't know. Maybe this should be a board of doctors or something that's bipartisan. But it seems to me that in general, when it comes to a woman and her own health, and, you know, I mean, there's all kind. Look, doctors can prescribe drugs that would kill us all. I mean, you know, there's mm-hmm. there are doctors that prescribe steroids when they shouldn't be. There's all kinds of, you know, meth, amphetamines. There are all kinds of bad doctors out there. But we have laws that say you can't prescribe meth except for XYZ. You can't
right.
prescribe morphine except for XYZ. It seems to me you can do the exact same thing here. And that 99% of the time, a doctor will be looking out for their patient and will be trying to protect a woman's health and will only prescribe this procedure to protect her health. And for the 1% of doctors who are wacko, you know, convict them. I actually would support that if a doctor is having these late-term abortion procedures and it's not to protect the woman's health. And I consider myself pro-choice. But I would restrict, because to me, when you have an 8-month-year-old fetus and it can live outside the mother's body, then really the woman's interest isn't there anymore. It's very different for me from having a one-day-year-old after conception. So to me, I think that's a compromise point. I don't know if you have a comment on that before I go to the next subject.
I still am very, very uncomfortable with the whole process and procedure. I think I'm going to...
But shouldn't we err on the side of woman's health? I mean, letting an individuality and letting her make that decision for herself.
Again, there was inadequate testimony in front of the congressional committees that showed that this was necessary for a woman's health. It seemed...
I've been on those committees. You know how it is. The chairman of the committee decides who speaks, and they're the only ones that are allowed to speak, and opposing viewpoints go away. Martha, I want to thank you very much for your call. I appreciate it. One last topic before we go off the air, Mike. The president announced and what I just thought was perfect, Jay Leno, Saturday Night Live fodder, last week, that apparently he doesn't know what he's doing in Iraq. That isn't what he said, but what he said is he wants to appoint a war czar. A war czar, because apparently between the president and the Secretary of Defense and the Joint Chiefs of Staff, they really don't know what they're doing.
Secretary of State.
Secretary of State, National Security Advisor. Right. None of them know what they're doing.
But a lot of other ones, too, because you've got a lot of cabinet agencies that are involved in the rebuilding effort and things like that.
So he's going to appoint a war czar later on, having decided that a czar, of course, is the dictatorial king of Russia 100 years ago. They changed the name to execution manager, which has its own problems. But to me...
I'd go back to czar.
Isn't this just an admission that the president has no idea what he's doing?
No. What this is it's difficult. For 200 years, our cabinet has had difficulty in getting the agencies to work together. Even when they have a common cause and a common purpose, they don't seem to be able to work together because everybody has their natural turf battles. The czar, most recently we saw this in the intelligence community. All the intelligence reform about creating the intelligence czar was to get the disparate factions of the intelligence community all working together so that, you know, we'd have one place where all this was collected and connected rather than turf wars. This is what we're talking about now. You've got, you know, agencies that you would never think of, such as Housing and Urban Development. You've got AID. You've got many different agencies that are all working towards the ultimate success in Iraq, and there's not as much cooperation and coordination as there should be, and that's what the war czar is about, bringing those agencies as well as DOD, as well as the Department of State, as well as the security agencies all together and having one person that can drive the whole thing.
You and I both,
that's what it's about.
You and I both know how it works in Washington. When things start failing, what you do is you say, all right, we'll create a Homeland Security Department. Oh, and we'll put FEMA under it, and we'll take Katrina and put it here, and you just mix the boxes around and say, ha, we solved the problem. If we needed a war czar, wouldn't the president have appointed him or her 4 or 5 years ago? It seems to me that we're having lost this war. We are now looking for someone to blame.
So you're
and
now
so
on
the
Henry
war
Reed's
czar,
side.
I want to change the title to scapegoat. That would be the title, because the president apparently offered the war czar title to two very high-ranking generals, and both of them said, no thanks, Mr. President. Now, I would think you'd want to be war czar. I mean, czar of a war? That's a pretty good title. I think these generals know that they were being set up for being a scapegoat. And that way the president could say, well, it all failed. It was my war czar.
No, I don't think so. I do think there's a need for better cooperation and coordination between the various agencies that are involved here.
Is that a National Security Advisor supposed to do?
I think the president ought to just knock some heads and tell them to start cooperating and let's not have
Who's
any more turf wars and things like that.
Who's not cooperating?
Congress
isn't, but apart from that.
I'm sure every single agency has their vision of what their turf and what their responsibility is.
Isn't it the role of the president to make those decisions?
I just said the president ought to knock some heads
so
together.
So we don't need a war czar, do we?
I don't think we need a war czar, and I don't think we're going
to
see a war czar.
I don't think
However,
so
let me say I'm disappointed to hear you say that you agree with Harry Reid that you think the war is lost.
It is lost.
The war is not lost until you surrender. We're over there. We have kids that are fighting
valiantly.
The war
is not lost until we surrender.
We have kids
really?
That are fighting valiantly, Mark. And
they don't know what they're fighting for.
Actually, they do.
They don't. They're fighting to stay in the middle between Sunnis and Shiites, keep them from killing each other. Is that why we went to war?
No, they're fighting to give the Iraqi people a chance to improve
their
lives.
The Iraqi people?
Yes, the Iraqi people.
There's no
people.
Such thing. There's the Kurds, there's the Shiites, and the Sunnis. There's very little national
identity left in Iraq. The Iraqi people still think of themselves as Iraqi.
Some do.
And to tell a young PFC who's over there risking his life going on patrol every day,
Mike,
the way Senator Reid did, that he's over there for nothing because the law is already lost.
It's just like the many tens of thousands who lost their lives in Vietnam after we'd already lost the war.
If we could impeach Reid, we would do that.
America wants our troops home. Iraq wants our troops out of Iraq.
No, they don't.
The war? Sure, they do.
No, they don't.
The majority in every poll does. The people in the government that ran for it said we're going to get out.
You know what?
It's time to go. We can't win.
We
don't even know what we're fighting
when
for.
When your party's leaders start bad-mouthing the troops in the field for political gain.
Oh, come on.
That's what Reid did.
That's unfair.
That's what
Reid
did.
He did not bad-mouth the troops in the field. He simply told the truth, which is we lost the war a long time ago. That's it for the Inside Scoop. Silence.
You're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
This is the Quality News Network. President Bush once again insisted he would veto the latest Iraq war spending bill in Congress if it contains a timetable for troop withdrawal as the Democrats agreed on. The president said it would, quote, embolden our enemies. The proposed bill would set October 1st as the date to begin the U.S. troop pullout with the goal of completing the withdrawal in 6 months. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid's response to the president was that he's in a state of denial. He also added that the war cannot be won militarily. In the Diyala province northeast of Baghdad, an al-Qaeda-linked group claimed responsibility for the double suicide truck bombings that killed 9 U.S. paratroopers Monday. 20 were wounded. It was the worst attack on U.S. ground forces in Iraq in more than a year. On Capitol Hill today, the brother of Army Ranger Pat Tillman, who was killed by friendly fire in Afghanistan, testified before a congressional committee. He accused the government of deliberately misrepresenting his brother's death. Former Army Private Jessica Lynch, who was rescued after her convoy was ambushed in Iraq, also testified. She said, quote, "The American people are capable of determining their own ideas of heroes, and they don't need to be told elaborate tales." In Newcastle, Indiana today, a full-scale riot which broke out at the men's prison, a medium security facility, has now been contained. There were at least 2 fires burning in the courtyard and 2 staff members were reported hurt. Vice President Dick Cheney had a medical examination today on his left leg where he recently had a blood clot. Doctors say his condition is improving. In Ethiopia, near the Somali border, gunmen killed 65 Ethiopians and 9 Chinese workers at a Chinese-run oil field. A group of Somali rebels claimed responsibility for the deadly attack. In Moscow, hundreds of mourners paid their respects to former Russian President Boris Yeltsin, who died of heart failure yesterday at the age of 76. He will be buried tomorrow. Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. This is the Quality News Network. President Bush once again insisted he would veto the latest Iraq war spending bill in Congress if it contains a timetable for troop withdrawal as the Democrats agreed on. The president said it would, quote, embolden our enemies. The proposed bill would set October 1st as the date to begin the U.S. troop pullout with the goal of completing the withdrawal in 6 months. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid's response to the president was that he's in a state of denial. He also added that the war cannot be won militarily. In the Diyala province northeast of Baghdad, an al-Qaeda-linked group claimed responsibility for the double suicide truck bombings that killed 9 U.S. paratroopers Monday. 20 were wounded. It was the worst attack on U.S. ground forces in Iraq in more than a year. On Capitol Hill today, the brother of Army Ranger Pat Tillman, who was killed by friendly fire in Afghanistan, testified before a congressional committee. He accused the government of deliberately misrepresenting his brother's death. Former Army Private Jessica Lynch, who was rescued after her convoy was ambushed in Iraq, also testified. She said, quote, "The American people are capable of determining their own ideas of heroes, and they don't need to be told elaborate tales." In Newcastle, Indiana today, a full-scale riot which broke out at the men's prison, a medium security facility, has now been contained. There were at least 2 fires burning in the courtyard and 2 staff members were reported hurt. Vice President Dick Cheney had a medical examination today on his left leg where he recently had a blood clot. Doctors say his condition is improving. In Ethiopia, near the Somali border, gunmen killed 65 Ethiopians and 9 Chinese workers at a Chinese-run oil field. A group of Somali rebels claimed responsibility for the deadly attack. In Moscow, hundreds of mourners paid their respects to former Russian President Boris Yeltsin.